Coming up on the program today, comings and goings at the White House, corn and global trade, and hey, how are those New Year's resolutions going? Anyway, from American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Monday, today the 23rd of January. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. Every new presidential administration starts with a flurry of activity, and the Trump White House is proving no different in that regard. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has been following the news from the White House all day for us. Hey, Sabri.
Hey, Kai.
So here we are, the first full working day of the Trump presidency. Starts with a big meeting, right?
Yes, big meeting with all kinds of CEOs from Dell and Whirlpool, Ford, Lockheed Martin, U.S. Steel, Tesla. You can see the manufacturing emphasis there. They met in the White House. This is the first of maybe quarterly meetings with business leaders. He asked these folks, you know, what can I do for you? And he made a few pronouncements. He doubled down on his commitment to companies that, which he's been saying for a while now, if you leave the U.S. to produce things you want to sell here, you're going to pay a big tax. He doubled down on his commitment to lower the corporate tax rate from 35% down to 15%. And he told these leaders, you know, we want to reduce regulation, make it easier for you to do big projects.
Talk to me about that for a second, because he said he wants to cut federal regulations by 75%, maybe more. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you measure regulation, I suppose. If you're talking about like reducing the entire body of federal regulation by 70%, 75%, that would be a Herculean feat. But, you know, he could well be talking about reducing the flow of regulations, like how many a month come through. That's doable.
All right. The CEOs at this meeting, many of them went out front on the White House driveway as CEOs and people who meet with presidents do after these meetings. What did they have to say? They were pretty positive, right?
Yeah, they didn't seem complaining on the White House lawn. You know, the CEO of Dow Chemical said, you know, he takes the president at his word that he's not going to do anything to harm competitiveness. You know, he's going to make us all more competitive.
Okay. The other thing the president did this morning, executive orders, a couple of them. The first one, withdrawing from the TPP.
Yep. Number one thing. This is the trade agreement between 12 Pacific nations, excluding China. This was a symbolic act because that agreement is well already dead in Congress. Bernie Sanders was thrilled. He said he's glad it's gone. John McCain, he said it was a strategic mistake with lasting economic and strategic consequences.
All right. And after that, there was another one. What was that one?
He wants to freeze, or he has frozen, the size of the federal workforce. This is a part of a list of promises he made to clean up the corruption and special interest collusion in Washington, D.C. Interesting note here is that the size of the federal workforce is actually already its smallest since 1966. Like, it has not grown appreciably beyond the 4 million mark, where it's sort of teetered around for many decades. And the reason is you actually have a lot of work, a lot more work done by state and local governments, or you have a ton of contractors doing work, and this executive order will not touch those. So it's symbolic.
There was no mention of NAFTA, right? I mean, this, you know, Sean Spicer, the president's press secretary, talked a lot about trade in his press conference. We're going to do more about that later in the show. But there was nothing about pulling out of NAFTA today, right?
Yeah. He said, you know, we haven't triggered the trigger, not yet, but it is definitely on their minds. They're going to meet with Mexico's foreign secretary in a couple of days, meeting with Canadian officials. They're going to get that ball rolling. And the press secretary Spicer alluded to several announcements we might hear this week. So keep your eyes on that.
Sabri Benishore in New York for us, covering the president. Sabri, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
It is worth a mention here as we go on that the president held a meeting with leaders of organized labor this afternoon. Those leaders then coming to the White House driveway to say that they, too, had a good meeting. Tomorrow, it's the big car company CEOs paying their visit. Also today, in that mix of executive orders, by the way, the president re-upped a policy originally put into place during the Reagan administration, a ban on using U.S. foreign aid money for healthcare groups that provide abortion counseling. And finally, late today, the president named sitting FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai to be the new chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Pai, you should know, is opposed to the set of regulations promulgated during his predecessor's time that are known as net neutrality. On Wall Street today, there was no joy in Mudville. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so here's a phrase that's in the news, but it's a phrase and some news that's a little policy wonk-ish. Block grants. Over the weekend, Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway said on one of the Sunday talk shows that the White House wants to completely overhaul Medicaid, the health insurance program for low-income Americans, as part of getting rid of the Affordable Care Act. They're going to do it, Conway said, by making federal Medicaid dollars straight-up block grants to the states. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has this explainer from our help desk at WHYY.
Under Medicaid, states have an agreement with the federal government. Think of it like a contract, says Ben Ippolito, an economist with the American Enterprise Institute.
No matter how much the states spend, the federal government covers at least half of the cost indefinitely.
Did you catch that word, indefinitely? That means no cap on federal Medicaid dollars, no limit. President Trump and Republican leaders in Congress want to do it a different way. Block grants. That gives states a lump sum to cover their health costs. Trump's health secretary nominee, Tom Price, championed a plan like this in Congress last year that cut Medicaid by $1 trillion. The idea, says Ippolito, is to rein in spending.
In the plans we've seen, block grants are almost always associated with cuts in federal funding to states over time.
Republicans have been pushing this for decades. Supporters say block grants give states more authority to direct health spendings where they want, like a program to fight the opioid epidemic. Chiquita Brooks-LaSure with the consulting firm Manat agrees states do need more latitude, but she says you don't have to slash budgets to get there.
And I think that needs to be the focus. Can states get additional flexibility without putting people at risk?
Nobody's ever gotten a Medicaid block grant program through Congress before, and Edwin Park with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities says it's going to be pretty hard this time around, too. He says capping Medicaid funds could leave states broke in critical moments.
Whether it's a recession, a new medical breakthrough, an epidemic, a disaster, then states will be responsible for all of those additional costs.
Park says if states can't turn to Washington in these times, they could be forced to cut from other parts of the state budget, say education or infrastructure, or they could cut health services for the poor, disabled, and elderly. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
History offers an example of how block grants might work in practice. 20-plus years ago, Clinton-era welfare reform hinged on block grants. It's a story we covered in detail in our podcast, The Uncertain Hour. Check it out. Subscribe. It's on iTunes to see how states are actually spending that money once they get their hands on it. All right, so as Sabrina and I were talking about, President Trump pulled the United States out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership today, scrapping his predecessor's most significant proposed trade deal. In its place, Mr. Trump has said the policy will be America First, a policy that will include bilateral as opposed to multilateral trade deals. The policy change leaves open to interpretation the traditional American position as the global champion of free trade, and that is a position the Chinese President Xi Jinping is ready to take. Marketplace's Adam Ellington has the story.
An odd scene at the World Economic Forum in Davos last week. Xi Jinping, the most powerful man in the Chinese Communist Party, through a translator addressed the giants of capitalism about the dangers of protectionism, which he compared to locking yourself in a dark room.
Well, wind and rain may be kept outside, so are light and air. No one will emerge as a winner in a trade war.
Many viewed Mr. Xi's Davos speech as a rebuke of U.S. President Donald Trump. But is China actually ready to lead on free trade? Sebastian Dulin is a policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations.
It's not realistic, and I doubt that the Chinese actually are aiming for that.
Dulin says China will likely pursue more free trade arrangements, particularly in Asia, but
this will be something molded in what the Chinese need and want, and they will use this to increase their political clout in the region.
China's growth to date has been based on a combination of exports and protecting domestic industries through tariffs. Robert Daly is director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States. He says to be a true champion of a free trade system means you have to be willing to pay a price.
To sometimes act in the interest of the system itself or in the interests of other partners within the system rather than in one's own narrow short-term interest. China does not have a record of doing this.
Even so, Daly says China's a huge market, meaning it will be a key player in any negotiations on global free trade. I'm Adam Ellington for Marketplace.
The thing about trade, about which there was much talk this morning by the president and by his spokesman, is that it crops up in slices of the economy you might not expect. For instance, corn. We know a guy who grows corn. Keith Alverson is his name. We talked to him first in South Dakota about 3, maybe 4 years ago, occasionally since then. Keith, it's good to have you on again.
Yeah, thank you for having me back. Good to hear your voice.
Let me ask you, first of all, how's the corn business in South Dakota now?
Yeah, we had a bin buster crop, busted the grain bins, and so it was a record crop for us, at least on our farm and, you know, a lot of farmers in the area. We had some hiccups in some parts of South Dakota where the weather didn't cooperate quite so well, but, you know, things are looking up. You know, everybody's feeling pretty good about the crop production end of things. You know, of course, the prices are down just because we've got such a big supply. And so that puts a damper on things, but, you know, everybody feels good about growing a big crop.
Let me ask you a question in your capacity as a member of the board at the National Corn Growers Association and there in South Dakota on that board as well. How are y'all feeling about America and global trade and how important that whole political conversation that we're having in this country is to you?
You know, I think we're optimistic about the future. Most farmers you'll find are optimists. We talk pessimistically now and again, but we're kind of going into this with nervous anticipation. You know, trade and global issues are a huge deal to us, just because, you know, about 15 to 20% of our corn crop gets exported. So it's a big deal when we start talking about trade issues.
Right. What are your thoughts on Sonny Perdue, the former governor of the state of Georgia, rather, who's now going to be the Secretary of Agriculture? President Trump is hoping anyway. He's been nominated. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, I think I don't have firsthand experience with Sonny, mm-hmm. but you know,
well, you call him Sonny though. How about that, right?
Well, how about Secretary Perdue or Secretary elect? You know, heard good things. He's been involved in the grain business, you know, throughout most of his life and has been successful at that. And so he knows the value of trade and marketing and things along that line. And so we're optimistic and, you know, looking forward to working with him.
Take me down to the smaller scale. When you go to the feed store or you have a cup of coffee with the guys there in town, what are you talking about?
You know, one of the things that we've heard throughout the election process is, you know, concern over potential regulations within farming and industry. You know, so those things are always a concern. We talk a lot about, in my area especially, it's ethanol and how is this going forward? You know, the renewable fuel standard is one of our very top priorities within, you know, the whole corn world. And so, you know, how this plays out and support for that has really been important to us, and to have that be a successful and vibrant industry.
Keith Alverson is a corn farmer out near Chester, South Dakota. Keith, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Coming up.
For what we do as Equinox, as a brand, we don't really have competition.
I don't know. There are a lot of gyms out there, huh? The CEO of Equinox, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is down 27 points, about a tenth of 1%, 19,799. The NASDAQ down 2 points, just a touch, I think technically is the term, 55.52. The S&P 500 ducked 6 points lower, a quarter of 1%, 22.65. Sprint rang up 2.8% today after it announced it's going to acquire a 33% stake in the music streaming service Tidal. Aetna down 2.7% after a federal judge blocked the health insurance company's plans to buy rival Humana. The judge said the deal would lessen competition in the sale of certain Medicare-related insurance plans. Humana fell on the news but ended things up 2.25%. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 2.40%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey, everybody. Molly here.
It's Kai, but you already knew that.
You did. But we have something that we would like to tell you together.
We are doing a new podcast. It's called Make Me Smart, about the things we want to know more about but don't always have time to dig into on this daily program.
Yeah, and it's about you, too, the things that you want to know more about and the things that you're an expert on. We'd like to have you on the show, too.
And mostly it's me and Molly having fun. Check us out at marketplace.org/makemesmart. There's lots more info there.
And please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you podcast.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. British Prime Minister Theresa May goes to the White House later this week, the first foreign leader to visit during the Trump administration. She spent today, though, Ms. May did, laying out a new post-Brexit industrial strategy for the United Kingdom.
It's about doing what every other major and growing economy in the world does. Not just sitting back and seeing what happens, but putting in place a plan and getting on with the job.
The other big thing that Prime Minister May is banking on is a bilateral trade deal with the United States, a way, perhaps, to help her negotiations with the all-important European market post-Brexit. From our European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is on that one.
Revving up one of his company's hand-built sports cars, Julian Turner looks a picture of self-confidence. But as the boss of Westfield, a small British car maker, he's anxious. Britain is leaving the EU, and without a free trade deal, that could leave him facing hefty tariffs.
We're very worried about tariffs going on our vehicles, going into the Eurozone. It will destroy the market. People will just not buy our product and look elsewhere for something different.
But he's an entrepreneur. His anxiety is tempered with optimism as he seeks out fresh markets abroad.
We've been looking into China, Korea, and the United States of America. There's plenty of opportunity, you know, and especially with America, it's the land of opportunity.
Prime Minister Theresa May feels the same. She's hoping for a free trade deal with the UK's closest ally, cashing in on the ties of blood, language, and history.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down to mighty Mississippi.
Okay, so the relationship did get off to a rocky start.
Fought the bloody British in the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and a British...
But Theresa May has been keen to accentuate the more recent shared history. She sent Donald Trump, along with her congratulations, this recording of Winston Churchill in 1941 addressing the American people.
I feel a sense of unity and fraternal association.
May wants a special relationship with Trump's America, exploiting his support for Brexit, taking him up on his offer of a free trade deal. Trade between the two countries is roughly in balance, worth around $44 billion a year to each side. No one can say it's unfair. Chloe Westley of the pro-Brexit campaign group Change Britain thinks this deal will go ahead.
I think Trump has a special place in his heart for the UK, and other senior Republicans like Paul Ryan have also expressed an interest in signing a trade deal with the UK. So it's all looking very positive at the moment.
Theresa May hopes that a deal with the US will bolster her chances of a free trade agreement with her European partners. It may have the opposite effect. Alan Winters of the Trade Policy Observatory says the US will insist on full access to the UK for its farm produce, and that would cut into European exporters' share of the British market.
That would be something that we were essentially taking away from the Europeans, and it would make it quite a lot more difficult to reach an overall deal with the European Union.
And he says the Brits should not forget the importance of the market on their doorstep. While America currently takes 12% of UK exports, the EU takes almost 50%.
The European Union is large, similar to us, very close and very rich. And so, yes, it's always going to be our dominant trade partner.
There are other obstacles to a UK-US deal. Will British consumers stomach American genetically modified crops or hormone-treated beef? But if there is a deal, stand by for a tidal wave of, among other things, British diapers. Bambino Mio, in spite of the name, a British company, packs up another consignment of its reusable diapers. The firm will cover more American than European babies' bottoms this year. The boss is Guy Sharnsheaf.
We are selling, and we're selling very successfully in the US. But I think what excites me about a free trade agreement is it will just make that process much easier.
But the sceptics say he shouldn't expect a sweetheart deal from Donald Trump, who, after all, wasn't elected to put Britain first. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
I don't know whether you're still hanging on to your New Year's resolutions or not, but I do know that that is the best way to get into today's installment of Conversations from the Corner Office.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Harvey Spivak is the CEO of Equinox Holdings, the company behind the high-end Equinox fitness clubs and some other fitness companies as well, SoulCycle and a no-frills gym franchise called Blink, and also now hotels. Harvey Spivak, it's good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
What did you see in this company in 1999 when you took over that gave you the clue that there was the expansion that you guys have seen in potential?
You know, I probably look much smarter than I am, but what I saw was a special brand that really had gotten into the DNA of its members. And I thought that there was an opportunity to take that and smartly scale that around the country. So what is interesting is when we went to raise capital in the late 1990s, mm-hmm. I had to defend against whether the gym business was a fad business.
Right.
The world has changed greatly, and I think that's not a trend. That is a reality, and that's going to go on for years to come.
How's business?
Business has never been better. 2016 was a record year. We opened more locations than we've ever opened in the history of the company. That would be 10, bringing us to a total of almost 90 locations. And we really can't satisfy demand in a lot of our key markets. So some of that's driven by macro trends around fitness and healthy living and the urbanization of the country, if not the world, all things that speak well to what we do and what we've been doing for 25 years.
Let me throw another macro trend in there, and that is the change in administrations in Washington and economic policy there. Are you guys secular on that? I mean, you think people are going to keep on working out and that's all good with you?
Yeah, I think people are going to keep working out. I would say that, you know, whether it was Hillary or Donald, I don't think that really affects our business. I would say Trump being the president, you know, a lot of people believe, including myself, that the economy is going to be fueled by his efforts. I do think, though, you know, if there's a repeal of Obamacare, I do think we think about insurance and medicine and keeping our country healthy in a backwards way, which is we're always looking to take care of people, but which is important, don't get me wrong. But there's less focus on the preventative side. And I think there should be some incentive around getting the country to move around and be active and eat in a better way. Not just worry about, you know, how to pay for the doctor appointment.
Who's your competition then? I mean, if you look at your competitive landscape, who are you worried about?
You know, it's a great question. And you know, sometimes this doesn't land the right way. But we don't really, for what we do as Equinox, as the brand, we don't really have competition. I mean, if you want the Equinox
can't
experience.
Can't imagine why that doesn't land the right way.
if you want the Equinox experience, if you truly want the Equinox experience, there's only one place to get it. So I think the real competition for us is how do we continue to serve our members because they're sophisticated, they've got financial wherewithal, and so they are active, they're traveling, they're enjoying, you know, different kinds of entertainment experiences, and so that is our competition. They want us as a brand to be at the front of how they're living their lives.
So this is going to sound like I'm poking you in the eye, but I'm really not. It's more of an acknowledgement of I think what you're saying, which is that this is a brand for elites, coastal elites, who have the time, the energy, and the effort to devote to taking care of themselves.
I'm going to poke you back.
Okay, go ahead.
I wouldn't say it's for the coastal elites. You know, we operate lots of cities around the country, not just New York and L.A. Certainly, we're not the cheapest guys out there, but the members have said to us repeatedly, that's okay as long as you deliver and we deliver. And they've also proven to us that they'll pay more if we can deliver more. And so that's something that we're constantly evaluating.
Getting away from the fitness bit of it, whose idea was it to do hotels?
You know, I think that was a, you know, one of those things that just morphs over time. I've been thinking about it for 10 plus years. If you think about going back to some of those macro trends, you know, 10 years ago, you were probably more extreme than the next person if you went twice a week.
Yeah.
Today, it's part of the daily routine. But when you travel on the road, it is hard to maintain that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find a hotel with a good fitness experience. For the most part, they're bad or really bad. And then there's the eating part. And if you look at the room service menu, so the list goes on that there's nobody really holistically thinking about, hey, how do I maintain my healthy routine on the road?
Did you work out this morning?
I absolutely did.
What'd you do?
I did intervals on the treadmill, and then I worked out with my trainer for an hour.
Yeah, you got me feeling like a slacker, man. I'll tell you what.
Let's go.
Harvey Spivak is the CEO of Equinox. Harvey, thanks very much.
Thank you.
There was a bunch more to my conversation with Harvey Spivak. We've got the whole thing available at our Corner Office podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Final note on the way out today. You know how we've been reporting about how companies are making adjustments to get along with the new president? Here is another one. Dippin' Dots, those little flash frozen balls of ice cream mixed with liquid nitrogen. Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, has had a long and public feud with that company, apparently, saying that despite its claims, Dippin' Dots are not the ice cream of the future. Well, today the company, like others in the new Trump economy, tried to make nice, saying in a statement that it would like to be friends, not foes, with the White House. I actually think I'm with Spicer on this one. They're not, it's not ice cream. All right, we're out of here. The Dow up 27 points today, about a 10%, 19,799. The NASDAQ pretty much even, 55.52 down 2 points. The S&P 500, 6 points lower, about a quarter of 1%, 22.65. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonner, Robert Garova, Jenny Josephson, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Ruzdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.